Welcome to The Feast Life, where we empower you, the modern homeschool mom, to create a life and homeschool you love, one founded on faith, family, freedom, and fun. I'm your host, Julie Ross, creator of the award-winning homeschool curriculum, A Gentle Feast, and a certified Christian life coach. For more information on today's episode and to access my free gift for you, check out thefeastlife.me. Charlotte Mason once said, life should be all living, not a mere tedious passing of time. So on this show, we seek to savor the feast of life. Girl, grab your favorite beverage and pull up a chair. You are welcome at this table. Hello, welcome to today's episode of The Feast Life. Are you feeling overwhelmed as a homeschool mom, struggling to balance it all while fostering the right habits in your kids? Today, I'm joined by Dr. Kelly Cagle, who helps moms simplify life so they can stop living in a constant state of overwhelm and start truly enjoying the daily moments. With a PhD in education, she is a motherhood coach and the host of the Parenting IQ podcast, where she equips parents during their children's academic years by combining educational research and everyday life. Her research has been published in the Journal of Research on Christian Education and Focus on the Family. Dr. Cagle's latest work is a children's Bible study, a devotional that helps kids grow in self-awareness and fights anxious thoughts. As a mom of three, Dr. Cagle also homeschools her kids. Trust me, you'll walk away with fresh insights and practical steps to transform your homeschool journey. Let's dive into this amazing conversation. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Feast Life. I'm your host, Julie Ross, and I'm here today with Dr. Kelly Cagle. I am so excited to have you on. I was telling you before we started recording that I've been stalking your Instagram, and it is so fun. I love your message, and I love your heart for moms and education, and so that's where we're going to dive in here. But before we get started, I would just love to know, like, how did you land on that you wanted to help parents?
That's a great question, and one that I ponder with all the time because I try to figure out, like, what is it exactly that does it, other than, first of all, is it's part of God's heart, right? Like, he wants families together and he wants us to partake in this gift and stewardship of our home. And so that's the number one, and you can't separate that from our role. But also, whenever I was an educator, I was a teacher, I noticed how there was a big gap in the kids whose parents weren't as involved and didn't know how to be involved or just didn't care to be involved, right, versus the ones whose parents were emailing me like, hey, what do you think? Should they move up to the, because I taught Spanish. And so Okay. Should I push them to take Spanish 3? Do you feel like, and just really engaged in their kids' learning. And I saw a big difference there. Not only did I experience that professionally, but then personally, when I was 11 years old, my family moved from Brazil to the US and I spoke no English at all. And I was 11 and my parents dropped me off at school. But before, mom said, hey, Kelly, you need to know two sentences so you can survive and be okay. And the first one was, sorry, I don't speak any English. So people wouldn't think I was rude. Yeah. And then the second was, may I go to the restroom, please?
Yes. That's
and then she said, good day. You're good. Yeah. Have a great day. And
I can't even imagine.
It was nuts. It was crazy. It was sad. Cause again, you're an 11-year-old little girl who, my dad was a pastor back home, a small town, everybody knew everybody. And then here I am in the US where I don't know anyone, neither can I meet anyone because I don't speak the language. But here's the crazy part, Julie. Although I didn't speak the language, the school counselor looked at my transcript and said, hey, based on your credits, you can skip to the second semester of sixth grade. Because of the academic calendar in Brazil, I had just finished fourth grade. And when I arrived in December of 98, it was middle of the school year here in America.
Yeah.
And so they said, hey, you know what? You just go on into the second semester of sixth grade because of your credits. So I skipped a year and a half of school. Wow. This sweet little soul that did not speak the language whatsoever. And that was always in the back of my mind. Wow, that's crazy that this first world education system Just said, okay, sweetheart, here you go. Good luck. And so that was in the back of my mind. And then I had another one when I was in high school. A girlfriend approached me and said, Kelly, I found out about the scholarship opportunity that we can get $2,500 for a community college and skip a year, like graduate early. So then again, I skipped another year and finished my high school requirements in 3 years. So altogether, I skipped 2.5 years of school. And that's where I am. Like, wow, the system isn't equipping our kids to the best of their potential, because I did not have potential when I arrived. They didn't see anything in me that were like, hey, you're GT, you're brilliant, let's do this. It was okay, based on your credits, here you go. So
Wow. So this so speaks to my heart. So when I taught fifth grade in public school here, I had a sweet little girl in my class who did not speak a word of English. And so I just, oh,
yeah.
yeah, I just felt
That was
so,
me.
because it's like, I don't know how to teach you. I don't speak Spanish and I don't know
Yeah.
how to teach you this material, but you still have to take the test at the end of the year.
Yep.
And again, it was one of, I think, a very similar experience of like, how is this benefiting anybody? This isn't benefiting these kids. And then some of my fifth graders, they were reading at a first grade reading level. And I'm trying to get them to learn this vocabulary about the chemical reactions and
Yeah.
these leaders in World War II, because they're gonna have a test on
Right,
it. But it's
right,
like, I gotta make sure
right.
you understand this. And I'm like, they're reading Junie B. Jones.
Yep.
Where are we going here? And I was like,
Absolutely.
this is failing our kids. And so was it primarily your experience growing up that made you start to want to go into this and question it? Or were you also then, you said you were a teacher too, right?
Yeah. So I would definitely say that primarily whenever I became a mom, that's when the light bulbs just exploded. It wasn't even like it went on, it just exploded. And it said, holy moly, what I went through as a little kid in the system cannot be what my kids, right? My kids deserve better. They need better. It became really personal then because my story is one thing. It was just part of my childhood and whatever. And then I went on and got an undergrad degree and was great. Then I became a teacher and I was like, all right, there's still some separation here. But then it became real personal when it came to my kids, you know? And then I said, no, no way. So whenever I have my first son, I have three boys, by the way. Now they're 13, 8, and 6. And when I had the 8-year-old, he was born, I was in the middle of my school counseling, my master's in school counseling. And I was in my internship and again experienced the fact that I thought, me without being in it, I thought that I could help kids more. Just be, I could be more, a little more impactful in kids' lives if I was a school counselor, a different title, not in the classroom teacher with what you just said that I have to teach them this content for this big test. It was, man, impact their person, their emotions, their home life, their school life, all of these things. And then I was in the middle of my internship, I was like, no, because then you're overseeing the tests, you're dealing with failure. Who failed what, where to put what schedules, and all these other, it wasn't still the benefits that I thought I could give to kids. And so in the middle of that, I just heard the Lord say, Kelly, just keep going to school to get your PhD. And I was like, huh, you're crazy. I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough. I can't do this.
With three little kids.
I had two at the time.
Two,
And then
okay.
when I got my acceptance letter to my doctorate program, I was 37 weeks pregnant with the third. So
Oh,
the first day of school, I had a 5-month-old nursing baby at home who hated sleep. I had a 2-year-old toddler who was the strongest willed child in the history of children. And then a 7-year-old who was starting his own little school journey. So, yeah.
And then you look back and you're like, how did I survive this?
Yeah, not a whole lot of sleep, a lot of grace from the Holy Spirit. And it was just, honestly, this is where I believe that we can do hard things because I restructured my life. I put some strong habits in place, boundaries like no other. And then I just knew that for the next, they suggested 5 years. But I knew for the next however many years, that's what I would be doing. So my goal was to finish in 3 because that's the earliest you could finish. And I did it. I finished in 3 years.
That's awesome. Congratulations, especially
Thank
with
you.
all the other things. Like, that's what it's
Yeah.
like, life sometimes doesn't give us the perfect circumstances to achieve our dreams.
Right.
And oftentimes it's the exact opposite. And
Yeah.
it's the continuing of pushing through that. And you talk a little bit about that. I've seen some of your Instagram posts about this kind of growth mindset and being willing to take the risks. And can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I would love to. So I think that sometimes these ideas of these dreams and these passions, we feel like we need to lay them aside in motherhood. And I believe they can be in tandem. I believe that you can still pursue your God-given purpose to the fullest, even when you are a mom, because your kids can come alongside you, right? So I don't think it's one or the other. I don't believe that you have to give up. And I'm not even saying that your dream should be to go to school and further your education. Maybe that is it. But it could be that it's legit to maybe start a co-op in your area with amazing to build this community that you see a need and then you go and you do it. So this growth mindset comes in. There's a researcher, her name is Carol Dweck, and she's brilliant. And she wrote the book called Mindsets. And it's sold, I don't even know, like over 5 million copies. It's just an amazing read. It's hard read if you choose to read it for pleasure. I
The
don't
TED
think that
Talk's
it's a
a
good
little
idea.
easier to digest.
So the fixed mindset is this, like, I failed. I can't do this. This is not the right season. I need to wait. And this is not like chapter closed, right? Book closed. I'm not going to do this right now. In reverse, the growth mindset is that you have this idea where in every opportunity, anything that you encounter in your life, you approach it through a different lens of how can I grow from this? For example, Julie, whenever you first started this podcast, you were probably like me because I also have a podcast, The Parenting IQ. Like me, when I started, I was recording to five people, and it was mom and dad, Josh, my husband, and then my three best friends, right? This is my audience. And I was like, I'm going to give them value because I believe in this message, but I have a solid audience of five for a few weeks. And then it became an audience of 10. And then it became an audience. So I could easily could have looked back and said, man, I just recorded four episodes this whole month, put out in this world. It took me so much time to write, so much time to record. There's so much work that goes behind this. However, there's very little return. I could have easily said, done. But now I'm 132 episodes in.
That's awesome.
I am part of the Christian Parenting Podcast Network. If I had given up then, if I didn't see the lessons and dug deep in myself to grow from those failures, if you will, that society would label as failures, then I would have given up a long time ago because it ain't easy and it's not for the faint of heart.
I'm sure
So
with
it
your schooling too, it was the same way.
exactly.
This isn't easy. I have these little babies.
Absolutely. I cried a lot, cried a whole lot driving home from school. And it was exhausting, but I knew that's where I needed to be. And so we can do hard things, even in this with toddlers, with younger kids. You said your daughter's older now, college. There are seasons in life, and you can decide when to start.
I think that mindset is so powerful just to really grasp. And it sounds like so simple when you see the basics of it, but like the actual practicality of implementing it is a lot harder. Just to give you a real practical example, this morning found out that my emails are not sending. So
Oh,
my email
gosh.
software that I use for my business isn't sending. It's 2 days before Black Friday. I talked to them, we got some things fixed, but they're like, it's going to be 2 to 3 weeks before everybody's emails start getting out of their spam folders.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm like, this is really bad. This is like my biggest time of second biggest time of the year compared to back to school. And I'm like, what are we gonna do? And again, before, like you're saying, it would have been like, there's no hope. This
Yeah.
I'm a failure. I might as well just give up, blah, blah, blah. And then it's but the growth mindset is I'm gonna keep taking action. There's gotta be another way. And one of the mottos I've adopted is I can't wait to see how this is gonna work out. It doesn't mean I just sit there and twiddle my thumbs and be like, okay, God, part the Red
Yeah.
Sea, make things happen. But it's,
Yeah.
I'm still taking action, but it's, I don't know how this is all going to work out, but I'm just going to have faith that it's going to work out somehow
That's
and being
good.
able to adopt that mentality and then teach it to my kids. And so and that's been huge for them because life isn't always black or white, fixed
Yeah.
growth. Either I got it right or it's wrong, or I learned this, or I'm a failure. Like, it's in those mistakes that we learn and grow. So, can you talk a little bit about how parents can get this for themselves, but then also teach it to their kids that they're homeschooling?
Absolutely. So I'm actually reading a book right now called It All It Takes Is a Goal by John Acuff. And
Yeah,
I know I do too.
love.
And he just taught me something very practical because I believe it's really applicable with what we are talking about right now. Do it in 15 minutes increment. Sometimes we feel like we need to have, like you said, the Red Sea needs to part and we need this super clear opportunity. My schedule has to be, my whole morning has to be cleared for me to sit down and get something done. And that hardly ever happens, especially in motherhood, especially for homeschooling moms, because our kids are with us 24/7. We are never off the clock. And there's always mom, mom, mom. It's always interrupted. Our work is always interrupted. I remember whenever I was doing my PhD, I would be writing my dissertation with two, a toddler and an infant in my lap, and they would just be hitting the keys. And I just knew, hey, right now is not a good time because I'm gonna spend more time delete, delete, delete than I will be writing words. But what John said in that book, actually, I think I heard that yesterday because I'm listening to the audiobook while I drive. 15-minute increments. It does not have to be big. And this is super important for us to teach our kids that kids, sometimes we wait for this big opportunity. My son plays soccer. My oldest son plays soccer. And so often, because he plays offense, so often it's how many goals did you score? And if he didn't, then it's, oh, I didn't have a good game. And instead, it's, dude, you had three assists. Or, dude, your defense today was extremely, was a huge improvement from last week. So, looking at these little increments of life, these little God winks, if you will, these
No, I love that.
opportunities to go and grow instead of looking for this huge moment.
Yeah, that's really good. 'Cause yeah, that doesn't always happen in our schedules in our days.
Yeah.
But then I love what you said to like your son too about teaching them to look for the things that I don't know if you ever read the book The Gap and the Gain, but I looking for the
Haven't.
gain, that's a really good one too. Looking for the gain rather than the gap. We tend to focus on the things that we're not doing well, the things that we see that aren't meeting our ideals in life rather than seeing the things that we are doing well. And so it all relates to that as
Yeah.
well. So then you went to school to get your PhD, and is that when you decided I'm going to start instead of working in schools, helping parents?
So I had no idea why I was getting a PhD. Like the very, it was crazy, Julie. The very first day that we're all meeting the cohort, there's 15 of us, and everybody is in like working in either public school or community college or university. And they all have these big goals and big reasons why they're getting this degree. And then they get to me, and I'm like, hi, my name is Kelly. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I don't know why I'm here. And I'm in this liberal college. I can't just say God told me, because technically I could. I definitely could have, but I didn't because I didn't want to be that person. Like, oh, here we go. But I was the only one whose kid was doing some kind of different schooling because in the beginning we were part of a university model school. So we hadn't started our homeschooling journey just yet. So I was the only one whose kids were in a private school. I was the only one who did not hold a full-time job, if you will, outside the home, because I stayed home, but that is a full-time job, mom. I was the only one who didn't have a plan after graduation. And Julie, when I tell you it was a step of faith and a step of obedience, I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah, no,
I
that's
had no
amazing.
goals. I had no plans. I didn't know why God had asked me to do that. All I knew was John 15, to remain in the vine. That is all I knew. And I knew there was pruning in my life. And I knew that if I remained in him, I would produce much fruit. And you will find that scripture in the at the very end of my dissertation, because, and it's a very first paragraph, because that's all I knew. That's all I had. That entire
That's
season, that's all I
beautiful.
had. Remain in the vine and you will produce much fruit. Remain in the vine and you will produce much fruit. I didn't know anything else. So my fruit of my PhD was remaining in him. And then once I graduated, and he starts giving me these opportunities that I still didn't know. And like I told you in the beginning, I with the podcast, and at first I started writing blogs, and then I started my website, was working 12-hour days doing it by myself and trying to figure it out and crying in the middle of it with kids and all of these other things. And God just opened doors and brought my amazing assistant into my life. She does all the, she's the creative expert. That's technically her title, the creative expert.
I love it.
And she does all the things that make my black and white words pretty. What I really want to say is that even when you don't know the big goal, is that you can still obey. You look at Abraham, when God told him, bring your son to sacrifice, he didn't know the outcome. And Isaac is sitting there, okay, dad, like, I see the wood, I see the fire, we have all the things together, but now where is the sacrifice? And Abraham was just obedient. And he just did the very next thing he knew to do, and he just kept obeying. And then as soon as he lifted up that knife, God, the angel said, okay, I see that you are trustworthy in the little things that build up to this big moment of, now I'll bless you, Abraham. Now I see that you're faithful. And so often in our lives, again, we need God, give me the road plan. Tell me what I'm doing here. And a lot of times we don't know. I had no idea. The reason why I started this is because when I graduated, I told my husband, hey, okay, I'm done now, so I need to get a job. And he's, I don't want you working outside the home. I don't want the kids not being here. I've gotten used to this rhythm that we've established in our home. Although there were strong habits, strong boundaries, very big structure, he got used to it too, and he started benefiting from it. So he said, no, this, we're gonna figure something else out. And so I started the IQ Network. So Mom IQ Coaching is where I, my motherhood coach, and then work alongside moms to bring this rhythm of simplicity and really just wholeness into their home. And then also Parenting IQ podcast.
Yeah, that's beautiful because I think we get exactly what you're saying. We want the roadmap. We want the destination. We want a guarantee that it's all going to work out and be easy. And then, so we stay stuck because that's not going to ever happen.
Exactly.
Rather than, like you're saying, take those small steps. I think of it, I lived in a neighborhood once that had these street lights, but they were motion detectors. If you went for a walk at night in the neighborhood, you'd walk under a street light, it would turn on. But then to get to the next street light, there would be a period where it was like dark and scary, and you weren't sure if the next one's going to turn on or not. And then it was like, oh, okay, now I know the path. And I love that because it was such a metaphor of, okay, this is the journey that I've been on too, like of God going, okay, here's the next step. Okay, here's the next step. But I also hear from parents a lot, and tell me if this is something you hear, if it's hard, I'm doing something wrong. No, that's that actually probably means you're doing something right.
And I think, Julie, the reason why for that is because we live in this information age. And there's always somebody out there that's further along in the journey than you. This comparison thief starts coming in and it starts distracting us from our current journey. And so it starts robbing us of the joy that we can find in the now because we're like, oh, I'm not here. Oh, I don't have this. Oh my gosh. It's Thanksgiving or it's Christmas. What am I getting my kids? I don't know. And you're talking about Black Friday and you're like, it's easy for you to think, oh my gosh, what are my people thinking that I said I was going to do this? Now I'm not doing it. And probably so and so isn't doing that. The software the so and so uses probably is not. And so it's just a snowball effect of less than, and it becomes distractions.
100%. So in terms of, you mentioned this a couple times, of getting your PhD and the work that you're currently doing while also homeschooling three kids, right? Is the importance of habits and boundaries. And my audience is primarily moms who use Charlotte Mason's philosophy. And she was a woman who talked a lot about habits and had very clear boundaries in her daily routine and the way that she structured her life in order to write the volumes and do the things she did. So I would love to hear from you, like, practically, because I do agree, in order for you to be obedient and take these steps, if everything else is chaos, that's going to be a lot harder. So some of the hard we're creating for ourselves sometimes. So what are some kind of really practical start here advice would you give for these homeschool moms of, okay, you need to get these few things in place before if you want to start doing some of this other stuff?
Today's episode is brought to you by A Gentle Feast. A Gentle Feast offers a complete living books curriculum, an award-winning early reading program, and more tools to equip you to apply Charlotte Mason's timeless philosophy into your modern homeschool. Go to agentlefeast.com to check it out. Smooth and easy days are closer than you think.
Okay. I'm going to give you three.
Okay.
And I'm going to start with, I'm going to save the best one and most important for last.
Ooh, I love it.
I think that the first one is be super choosy. You decide, is today a good day for a play date? Or is, although I want to hang out with my friends, but is today a good day? My kid's tired. We went to bed late. All this other stuff that the kid's going to have meltdowns and, or they're hungry. Right now is not a good time to go to Target because the Target tantrums are real and true that everybody's been there.
Yep.
And so be choosy, decide exactly what belongs on your plate for that day or in that season. Be choosy. The second one is have a laundry schedule. Laundry never ever ends. And the moment you think it ends, your kid's going to come in from outside with wet socks and muddy, all the things, and this yogurt spilt on their shirt. And you're like, all right, let's take this off. It just never ends. So creating a schedule for that task alone, and you can do this with a whole bunch of different tasks in your home.
Right.
But I think laundry is just one that's every mom has, every mom experiences. So in that season, before I used to do it twice a week, it was Mondays and Thursdays. But now with my son's soccer schedule, he needs his uniform. He only has two sets and he needs the training gear. He only has two. So I'm now doing laundry Mondays and Wednesdays and Fridays. So that way he has all of his clothes. But other than that, laundry is not happening. It is in the back, like it's there, it's piling up and I will deal with it when the day comes.
Yeah.
I have a laundry schedule. Then the third one and most important one is your sleep. If you work everything backwards, everything starts backwards. So, man, I want to be such a good mom. I want to talk to my kids with gentle voice and be kind and really be in the moment to homeschool them. But that means that I also need to make sure that I spend time with Jesus first thing in the morning with my warm cup of coffee, the one that I've like finished my one full cup without having to put it in the microwave. Well, in order for
Wait,
you to wait,
that actually happens?
It does. It has been happening to me for 8 years.
Wow.
8 years. I actually drink 3 cups of coffee before my kids ever wake up. Because I wake up, that's a boundary that I set for myself back when I started my PhD is to wake up at 5:30 every single day. That is the time I wake up Monday through Friday. It doesn't go beyond that. But it is even a step further is what time do you go to bed for you to be able to wake up at 5:30 in the morning? Yep.
And I'm okay, what time do you go to bed?
I'm a granny and I am in bed at 9:30.
Me too, girl.
I prefer, I'm asleep at 9:30. My light's out. I prefer to be in bed at 9:00.
Okay.
With my glass of water by my bed, with my book and my glasses, I'm reading so that at 9:30 I can lights out, glasses off, book closed, and asleep. So sleep, prioritize your sleep because the mom you want to be can't be an exhausted mom. She just doesn't exist. An exhausted mom being the exact mom you want to be does not exist.
Yes, that's so true. And of course there's seasons because I automatically think of the mom as I got a baby. Yep. My husband works third shift or we have these crazy weird schedules or something like that. But I think just having it in your mind that it's a priority because, we can just get into really bad habits of, one more episode of that show on Netflix. Or, let me put my phone by my bed and just go check on Instagram one more time before I go to sleep. And then 30 minutes later, you're like still on Instagram.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you're right. Like the seasons of life, just because I'm in this current season that I can do this doesn't mean that's everybody's season. When I would wake up at 5:30, I still had interrupted sleep, but I had something I was working towards. So that was important to me. But then a lot of times when my baby napped in the afternoon, my babies, because I had two little ones napping, I would nap too.
Me too, girl. You know? I love me some naps. So,
figuring out the rhythm, the season that you're in, but sleep being a huge factor and priority.
Yes, that's so good. And it's just keeping that in your mind that this needs to be a priority and then working you'll see a huge transformation when you make it a priority for sure. Another thing I hear a lot from moms, and this really ties in well because I feel like you're homeschooling, right? And even though I sell a curriculum, a lot of the things I talk to parents about, it's not so much what curriculum you're using, but it's a parenting
issue and what your expectations are versus reality. And the expectation being everyone's going to sit and be quiet and they're going to love every lesson that we do and no one's ever going to complain or argue or whine or not want to do the thing. And then when they do the thing and they're like, why do we have to do this? The amount of emotions it creates in the mom and the story they're telling themselves that means is so huge. And then their reaction, and it just creates this whole thing of, okay, where it's getting back to the heart of, okay, this doesn't necessarily mean you got to throw everything out and start over, because that same issue is still going to be there. And part of it is like a lot of the stuff you talk about with like your parenting, but and also being able to process these big emotions for yourself and for your kids. So can we transition here and start talking about some of that? So how does that resonate with you? What do you help parents in terms of navigating the waters of parenting and homeschooling at the same time?
Yeah, no, I've got two-part answer to this. The very first one, you use the word expectation, and that's really difficult because so often we have this grand expectation. And whether that's when we're talking to our husbands, we feel like they're going to be, oh, yes, you're so right. Of course, I'll help you. Of course, I'll massage your feet. You've been on your feet all day. We have this expectation. And then they're like, no, your feet are nasty. I don't want to touch you. Whatever happens, expectations are almost always unmet. So if we set those aside and just be like, listen, I want to try something new. I don't know how this is going to go. You don't necessarily have to tell the kids this, but in your mind has the expectation. Lay those aside. And the thing about that is I always saw it in the classroom, and I consistently tell, whether I'm talking to teachers, whether I'm talking to even office people, is that chaos, when everything is chaotic, can really mean engagement. So if you have a loud meeting with your coworkers, it can be that everybody's engaged and everybody's passionate about what's taking place.
Yeah.
Same thing in the classroom. We used to play this review game in the classroom, and I taught high school.
Okay.
And it used to be Trascaball. It was like trash with basketball and Jeopardy and a review before a test. And if I went back and really analyzed the before and after we played trash kickball, the results from these test scores, I guarantee you it would be at least 100 of my students over the 6-year span that I taught, at least 100 or more that only passed Spanish because we played trash kickball, because it was chaotic, but they were engaged. And so even when your kids are being loud and obnoxious. I have 3 boys, and a part of the research that I do is gender differences.
Okay.
And boys are way physical. Girls like to please, and they like to be, not all, I understand, but according to gender difference research, girls like to please the teacher. So whether you are their teacher or there's a classroom teacher, boys, on the other hand, are not motivated by pleasing other people. They need that different kind of motivation. And a lot of times competition is it. Competition is always loud. Sometimes there's blood involved, and there's 9 times out of 10, there will be tears involved. Okay. So with that in mind, that's something big that I wanted to throw out there for you guys. Go with what it is that you see engages and hooks your child, sparks in their eyes, because curiosity is really what you want. You want them to be interested in it, not you to be interested in the lesson. That's part one.
Yeah.
Part two is another part of the research that I do. There's this huge theoretical framework that I love, and I do a lot of teaching on this. I've done podcast episodes on this. I even have a freebie that people can grab on my website for this. But there was this Howard Gardner is his name. He's Harvard psychologist. And he started saying, hey, you know what, guys? Your intelligence is just not measured by an IQ test. How you score on this test. He took it a step further and he said, there's a lot of people that show their intelligence in different ways. And there are 8 ways. And I won't unpack all of that here. Otherwise, we'll sit here and talk for another 30 minutes about this. But there are 8 different ways that people are gifted and talented and they are unique in those ways. So whenever we tap into our kids' strengths, that's what I like to say. Your kids have strengths. You, mom, have strengths. So if you operate in your strengths, you are really going to succeed. But if you're trying to operate in your kids' weakness, you're not going to succeed.
Or your weakness, yes.
Or your weakness.
Yeah.
However, just because you're weak in this area doesn't mean that, going back to your mindset, doesn't mean that it gives you an out and you're like, okay, I'm not good at this. I'm not going to do this. It's a complete opposite. You can have a growth mindset and be like, I'm going to focus on this. I'm going to help my child continue with to grow in this area because I want to strengthen their weaknesses. Because you can be, and the goal is for you to be really well-rounded when you reach adulthood, right? We all want kids 100%. that are well-rounded and can function. Yeah. So that freebie, I can give you the website.
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay. Yeah.
So it's at drkellycagle.com, right on the homepage. You're going to see a link that says the multiple intelligence theory. And this is really for you to help your learner grow. Okay.
Yeah. So, we'll link that in the show notes too, as well. Perfect. So that's great. That's great freebie. Now, and part of Charlotte Mason's approach is that you're offering all these different subjects to your kids and you're having this wide feast of learning because you don't know what they might take in that would lead to an area of growth. And because of the multiple intelligences, right, you're still exposing them to art and music and poetry and science, and you're outside exploring and you're doing these things because that's meeting the whole child, all these different parts of them. So I love that. Okay. So I do have a question. One of the things you said was about competition. How do you bring that into homeschooling? Because I know in a classroom, you could play basketball to review with all these kids. And I think classrooms can be a little too competitive, but how do you get that in a healthy way in a homeschool kind of setting?
So I think one of the big ways, for example, yesterday we were, my little one, so my baby is 6 and my other one is 8. My middle one is 8. So they typically do school together. I focus on both of them. My oldest one is very independent and he only calls on me whenever he needs help. But I'm focusing on the two, and one does math while the other does language arts, so I can really read to one while one can just ask me questions. Anyways, so we were doing that. My little one was just not. He just, I don't feel like doing this. Just not energized about it. And we were ready to be finished because we needed to go somewhere. So, great. Micah is the baby and Titus is the middle one. And I said, Micah and Titus, let's see who finishes first. But you need to do a good job because you're still learning. And this is still important. So they went for it. It was just like, boom. Yeah. It was the rabbit just kicked in gear. And literally his engagement changed immediately. And I didn't say anything. There's a prize. There's nothing. You are now racing your brother.
Yeah.
And Titus was barely looking up. That pencil barely stopped writing. And so sometimes even little things like that, a lot of times people think that competition isn't healthy. But if you have boys, competition, they thrive in competition. And I'm a girl and I'm different than they are. But I know that feels them. So I'm going to tap into this area to help them. Sometimes, Julie, let's move into chores. And you can do the same thing with schooling. It's all about setting a timer. Can you beat the timer?
Yep.
Boom.
Yeah. So they're kind of competing with themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, there's no prize. I'm not saying you get a sucker. Whoever wins first gets a sucker. Not doing any of that.
Yeah. That's great. I love that. Yeah. It builds that internal motivation as well because they're competing against themselves, but keeping it fun, keeping it a game and not.
And with excellence.
Yes. And not that you have to do this because I said so and get into a power struggle about it. The other thing, like I was saying, like I often see like parents really take it personally if there's any kind of resistance, and they can really be hard on themselves. Oh, I'm doing something wrong, or feel like shame or guilt or whatever. And all those emotions make things so much harder. So how do you deal with, like you were saying, like your son was, you turn it into a competition, but how do you keep from making that a story about you as a homeschool mom or you as a parent?
It's their learning journey, not mine. I've already gone to school. Me feeling bitter that they don't like this book. They're different people. My oldest, I was actually out of the country. My mother-in-law was with the kids here. And my son calls me and he's like, Mom, I need to tell you something. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is scary. What happened at soccer? What was he exposed? Because he's 13. What was he exposed to? What just happened? My mind went there. I thought he was exposed to something really bad. And he goes, Mom, I'm just not into this book that I'm reading. And it was Huckleberry Finn. And I said, oh, like, praise God. That's what that is. But that's fine. He's okay. But I went to the library. We have a library at our house. I went to the library and I found this other book. It's by Alan Gratz. I haven't read it yet. It's 2 degrees. And his excitement completely shifted in his voice. And he's like, would it be okay if I stopped reading this? I'm really trying to. I even looked for the audiobook. I was trying to see if I could. But Mom, I can't. It was written in the 1800s. I'm not understanding. I'm not engaged. Yeah. Can I switch to this book? Backstory. He is not a reader. He hates reading. I have had to basically set goals with him. I'm not exaggerating. Earlier this year, him and I sat with our family calendar and we set goals that every month he did this. At first of the month, he would read one book. And so he set this goal for himself. So I've come up, partnered with him to meet that goal because he's not a reader and he knows that. He doesn't enjoy reading. He's really active, high energy kid. If he went to school, I guarantee you he'd be diagnosed ADHD, but he's not. He is just high energy.
Yeah.
And so it's his reading journey. It's his love of reading connection that's being established right now, not mine. Mine's already here. I don't have to take it personal. It's his turn.
Yeah, I love that. That's really good. Yeah. And so did you let him switch?
I sure have. 1,000,000%. I said, buddy, you go for it. And then he even jumped the gun and said, okay, so now because I'm 2 weeks already I've already lost 2 weeks in this month. I'm just going to make this my book. And he shifted the deadline of when he would have to have it finished and how many pages he would have to read. He took charge because I let him. I partnered with what he wanted. It's not my, again, not mine. It's his book. It's his goal. It's his journey. It's his life, his interests.
Yeah, that is cool. That's really beautiful. And it takes some of the pressure off of you. And I think because a lot of parents I talk to, they're trying to control their children's reactions and make sure everything is like smooth and perfect all day long. And that's exhausting. And so a lot of parents are really burnt out, but it's this continual, I'm having to like make sure everything's wonderful and not letting their kids have that freedom to make mistakes or learn through trial and error or make their own choices. So let's wrap up here. I'd love to hear what you have to say to that mom who's just, I am exhausted. I am burnt out. I don't know if I can keep doing this. What would you say to her?
Yeah. So as you were giving that example, a client of mine, a conversation that I just had with one of my coaching clients came to mind. She's a mom of 2 and a 4-year-old. And she's, Kelly, my kids are like at dinner. We're trying to teach them to sit still. So as a mom, you order, you want people to be able to sit and like, but one of them is hanging just on one butt cheek and then like on the ground and there. And I said, listen, can I tell you something? Your kids are 2 and 4. First of all, let me remind you of that. Second of all, take wiggle breaks in the middle of dinner, set a timer for 15 seconds and say, everybody get up real quick and move around.
Yes.
The freedom in your home. And this is what I'm going to tell that mom with that backstory. Your home is your home. It is your safe haven. It is your kids' safe haven. It is your family's place to come and unplug. You, mom, are the heartbeat of that home. You are setting that rhythm. So if you set one of chaos and exhaustion and I'm always losing my cool and I'm always reacting because I'm internally exhausted because nothing is meeting my needs and this house is a disaster and all of that's your heartbeat that's coming out because the Bible says out of the mouth speaks what's in the heart, right? So this is what's coming out. This is what you are setting in your home. Guess what your kids are going to pick up on? That.
Yep. 100%.
That thing. On the reverse, if you set aside this expectation that we previously talked about and you say, this is my home, I set the rules. I don't have to have this thing, even though I got it from my mother-in-law. She's going to be so upset if I get rid of it. But right now it's just collecting junk and you can decide what belongs objects belong in your home. You can decide what fills up your schedule and what takes your time and energy. You can write your script and you can make your rules. So the rhythm that you set in your home is up to you. Your home, your rules, your game.
Yeah, I love that. That's very empowering, right? It's not trying to make our kids like everybody else's kids. And I think that creates a lot of frustration and a lot of exhaustion. So those are some really powerful words. Okay, one last question. I said I was done, but I'm not, because it made me think of something. So one of the things I hear a lot is, if I just let that go, like the dinner example, maybe think of it. And again, 2 and 4, okay, we have to have child developmentally appropriate expectations.
Yep.
Or realistic even. But if I let this go, I'm going to be teaching them bad habits. And in the Charlotte Mason world, I feel like, especially because there is that focus on habits, but it's almost like micromanaging microscope of everything your child does. So they never develop a bad habit about anything. And then there's also this expectation of, I need to train them not just in obedience, but in doing things with the right attitude. So I don't know if you've heard that obey right away, all the way with a happy heart. So I need to micromanage their reactions, but then also their attitude toward the thing I'm asking them to do. And it's this, like you're saying, this continual pressure cooker thing. I don't even remember what my question was. Sorry.
Choose your battles. Choose your battles. I'm with you. I was following you all along. I was visualizing everything you're saying. And to the mom, you were talking about not creating bad habits in your kids, because word.
I can't let anything go. Yeah.
Can't let anything go. Man, you have to choose your battles. You just have to decide, is this habit really fighting? For example, and this happens, every kid has the habit of picking their nose, and you just see, and it's so gross. But some of them go to the extent of, I'm going to eat it. And you're like, okay. Or others will go, this happened to my husband when they went to move, when they were little kids. They went to his brother's, they shared a room, and they went to remove the bed, and it was like booger nation on the wall. Disgusting. So definitely a habit worth breaking, because nobody wants this nasty kid that's then 8 years old picking their nose. Everybody's going to make fun of them. Everybody, doesn't matter where you go. However, the habit of, if you have a small kid, which I do, and my kid and my 6-year-old puts up his own clothes and has been since he was 3 years old, the habit of hanging the clothes perfect on the hanger, his motor skills at 3 are not developed. His motor skills at 6 are developing. So if I expect his hung clothes to look like my hung shirts, they will not. Why? Because I'm a 37-year-old adult who has already had their motor skills developed. My son is a 6-year-old developing child. So I'm not going to go in and tell him, hey, what you're doing is not good enough. I'm not going to try to break that habit. The habit you're trying to establish is, I am responsible for my clothes and I put them up, because I get to go and find them in my closet when I need to find something, right? That's the habit of your clothes, your stuff, your closet. This is what you're trying to teach him. But how it looks hung, if you go into his closet right now, the shirts look like this, like one side is hung, the other slipped out, just because he didn't fully put it. And you know what? It's okay. It's okay. That's not the habit I'm teaching. I don't have to go correct that, micromanage that habit right now. So choose your battles and be a little lighthearted when it comes to the perfection of the habit that you're forming.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great advice. Thank you for answering my question that I couldn't articulate. So to wrap up here, how can parents connect with you if they want to hear more, especially follow? Absolutely. They need to follow you on Instagram, because I love your Instagram account.
I love that. Thanks, Julie. I appreciate it. So Instagram, Dr. Kelly Cagle, Dr. Kelly Cagle. And my website is the same. Technically I'm in all social platforms, but I don't do them. So don't go follow me on TikTok. all the things. Follow me on Instagram. That's where I'm really heavy. Then my website is drkellycagle.com as well. And there you'll find the links for this freebie that you and I talked about, for my coaching, if you want to reach out and talk about how you can create this rhythm in your home. And then also the podcast, which is on Apple and Spotify, but it's Parenting IQ. And it's also on my website if you forget.
Yes, I love that. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Sure thing. Happy to do. Thanks, Julie.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Let's wrap up with some key takeaways. Number one, mindset matters. Dr. Kelly emphasized the power of adopting a growth mindset, not only for ourselves, but also for our kids. She shared how embracing challenges and fostering curiosity over perfection leads to long-term success in both homeschooling and life. Number two, the importance of rhythms and boundaries. To thrive as a homeschool mom, Dr. Kelly highlighted the need for structured rhythms and clear boundaries, like setting a dedicated laundry schedule and prioritizing sleep to avoid burnout. Number three, choose your battles wisely. Not every behavior needs correcting. Instead, focus on what truly matters, establishing habits that foster independence and responsibility while letting go of perfectionism in less critical areas. Number four, tap into strengths and intelligences. Understanding and leveraging the intelligences of your child can help tailor your approach to learning. Whether through games, creativity, or hands-on activities, kids thrive when their strengths are acknowledged and nurtured. And last but not least, homeschooling is a journey, not a sprint. Kelly's story of parenting with her son to find a love for reading highlighted the importance of seeing learning as their journey, not ours. Letting go of control and trusting the process creates a more joyful and effective homeschool environment. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Make sure to check out the show notes for all the resources from Dr. Kelly Cagle. Thanks for listening.
Hey there, Julie Ross here. I just wanted to say thank you for listening to today's episode. If you like this show, it would mean the world to me if you would leave a positive review in iTunes. This really does help people learn about the podcast. And each month, I will pick a winner to receive a free gift. Don't forget to check out all the free resources we created for you at thefeastlife.me. Thank you.